The BBC presents My Word. And here to introduce the program and the panel is Jack Longland.
My Word is a word game played by people whose business is words, and those taking part are Dillis Powell, Nancy Spain, Frank Muir, and Dennis Norton. And here's round one, which is a test of their vocabulary. 2 marks if they can give me, approximately, the meaning of the words I'm going to ask them. We start with Dillis Powell. Dillis, what is an ostreophagist? O-S-T-R-E-O-P-H-A-G-I-S-T, ostreophagist.
Well, that's a very interesting question, because I used to be one.
Are you?
No, I'm not anymore. I used to be one. And I'm not one anymore. So I've stopped being an ostreophagist.
Yes, I can't mark you yet.
Well, you wouldn't know what it is.
Yes.
An oyster eater.
Yes, exactly right. Somebody who eats oysters.
But not anymore.
But not anymore.
No.
That isn't in the word. That's an extra.
Yes.
All right, Dennis Norton. What are thews? I can't even say it. T-H-E-W-S.
Fumes.
Yes.
Love your tie, Jack. Fumes are those great knotted, ropey leg muscles that people like blacksmiths get, or the girls that I generally dance with, actually.
I think that's jolly good. 2 marks. It could mean mental or moral vigour. That's the sort of figurative sense
of the word. They ought to have that, the girls.
I don't suppose they do. Nancy Spain, the meaning of the word invigilate.
Well, it means looking after a lot of people when they're doing an exam.
And so what do you do? Why do you do it?
Well, you don't want them to cheat.
Okay, 2 marks. Thank you. The meaning of the word scaphoid. S-C-A-P-H-O-I-D. Scaphoid.
Scaphoid. Oid in the shape of.
Oid.
In the shape of.
Scaff.
Scaff. It's an eating place. This is jock scaff. Scaphoid.
They're closely connected
boat.
To your favourite sport, Frank.
Oh, boats.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Boat-like.
Yes, exactly that. It's boat-shaped.
Oh.
It's particularly applied to bones. There's one in the tarsus or ankle, and there's one in the carpus or wrist, and they're both shaped, or so they say. We've done all the well on that round. But before we start round two, what I'm going to do is to give each team a quotation that they can write down. And I want the 2 women members of the team to study their quotations during the program. And then at the end, I ask them where the quotations come from. Now, Dillis Powell and Frank, your quotation is, on y soit qui mal y pense. And Nancy, and Dennis Norton, yours is, against the undivulged pretense I fight.
Is it so it's or suet?
And then, at the end of the program, I asked Frank and Dennis to give me their ideas of how these words really came to be said or written. And I don't want any of these answers now. And so, round two. And this is a round of initials or abbreviations. 2 marks for the meaning of the following things. Dillis, Powell, DB.
DB, that's what I always say when I leave home, and he says, will you know any of the answers? And I say, DB, I can't remember the exact grammatical arrangement of the words, but it's something to do with the Latin for God, which is Dio, and vult, or something of the sort, meaning wishes, if God is willing.
If God is willing, yes. Dennis Norton, F-S-R.
F-S-R? It's the Flemish spinach renaissance.
You're a wartime career in the wrong service.
He was in the Navy.
Yes, you were in the Army.
You were in the Navy, weren't
you? Yes, I was.
Neither of you any help.
No.
There's nothing to do with court martial.
No, not FSR.
FSR?
I'm not going to get it. It's field service regulations.
Oh, nobody took any notice of that.
Now, what navy go?
Oh, we
Oh, what navy goes in the field? Charming. No, no. Somebody said.
Wrens do, don't they?
No.
And she spared before we get any further. Ibid, I-B-I-D, or I-B-Ib.
Well, if you find a quotation like, against the undivulged pretense I fight.
Yes.
And then it says where it comes from, and then underneath that it says something else from the same source, and it says Ibid.
That's right.
I always thought it was Latin, like Ovid.
It is Latin. It's short for Ibidem, which means in the same place. And that is, it comes out of the same book or passage or chapter as the thing that was just quoted before. Thank you. S-A-A.
Is this war?
Yes.
Small arms ammunition.
Small arms ammunition it is, and 2 marks. So the next round is a very serious round about literature. I give each member of each team a quotation and ask them to complete it, the next line or next couple of lines. 2 marks if they complete it fairly correctly, and 2 more if they correctly say where it comes from. Starting with this pile. Our revels now are ended. These are actors, as I foretold you, were all spirits and are melted into air, into thin air.
Well, now that must be Shakespeare.
Yes, Shakespeare it is.
Shakespeare. Tempest.
Yes, the Tempest.
Tempest.
Said by?
Prospero.
Yes, quite right. That's hard to...
And it goes on to say, Artis or something is rounded with a...
Our revels now ended. These are actors, as I foretold you, were all spirits and are melted into air, into thin air. And like the baseless fabric of this vision, the cloud-capped towers, the gorgeous palaces, the solemn temples, the great globe itself, yea, all which it inherits shall dissolve. And like this insubstantial pageant faded, leave not a rack behind. 2 and a half. Then Dennis Norden. Oh, what a noble mind is here o'erthrown.
Ophelia.
Said yes.
And then it goes on about the glass of fashion and the mould of form.
Yes.
And sweet bells jangled. And something about...
I think that's all right. We haven't actually mentioned the play, Dennis. I hate to be a stick.
Hamlet.
Yes. I think that's...
Spy.
And the Shakespeare was William.
Spy.
I think that's 3 and a half. Oh, what a noble mind is here o'erthrown, the courtiers, soldiers, scholars, eye, tongue, sword, the expectancy and rose of the fair state, the glass of fashion and the mould of form, and observed of all observers, quite done. Spoken by Ophelia, Hamlet, Act 3. Nancy Spain. The stubborn spearmen still made good their dark, impenetrable wood.
Each stepping where his comrade stood the instant that he
well
fell.
Well done. And?
Macaulay.
No.
Oh, it is.
It isn't.
Oh.
Go north of the border.
It's not Scott.
Yes?
It is Scott. Oh, that must be Marmion.
Yes. Pull through to a successful conclusion. It's Walter Scott, Marmion. Canto 34, describing the Battle of Flodden, I think. 4 marks.
Blue.
And then Frank Muir. Did you not hear it? No, 'twas but the wind. Or the car rattling, or the stony street.
Oh, yes. It's a car, so
car?
It's not all that old.
Not that kind of car.
A chariot and a car.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Nancy's waving. Byron.
I've got that.
It's a Byron car, Jack. It's a...
Right, give me the pen. I'll give you 2 marks anyway.
Child Harold.
Yes, it is.
Charlie Held.
All right, I think 2 marks is fair enough. Byron, Charles Harold's pilgrimage. Did you not hear it? No, it was but the wind, or the car rattling, or the stony street. On with the dance, let joy be unconfined.
Good heavens.
No sleep till morn, when youth and pleasure meet, to chase the glowing hours with flying feet. Dance or ball in Brussels on the night of Waterloo. Now, the next round is all about origins and derivations. What I want is the present-day meanings of these words or phrases and what their original meaning or origin was. So, present-day meaning and origin. Phyllis Powell, Aunt Sally.
Aunt Sally? It means something you throw things at.
Yeah, yes.
Yes, a kind of target.
Yeah.
A kind of... must have been a game.
It was a game.
It was a game. It's a kind of game, not of nine pins, but of...
I think I'll give you 1.5 marks, which is fairly good, I think.
I think it's very generous.
Somebody who has made the butt of other people's jokes, or gets the blame for it. Originally, Aunt Sally was a wooden head representing a female with a clay pipe in its mouth, which was set up on a stick, usually on a race course. Not on the race course, but on near it. That's a game. People threw a small wooden object, a sort of tiny bludgeon, and tried to break the clay pipe. Now, Dennis Norton, to lick into shape.
Well, if you send a boy to a school where they believe in rugged discipline, he is licked into shape.
Yes. By origin?
Well, it's from one of the oldest English sports, which is ice cream cornet. whereby I think all of us used to get the ice cream cornet and you try to make it go to a point, which is the shape for somehow more satisfying for a child than the oval. Now, there's a good thesis there. For
it's
somebody.
Jolly good, yeah.
I think that's what it was, Jack. You may have a theory, but they are divided about it.
It's jolly hard to divide an ice cream cornet. One out of two. Improving or making presentable or respectable. It comes originally from the tradition that the cub of a bear was born completely shapeless and remained shapeless until the mother bear, licked it into shape. Pope wrote about this. So watchful Bruin forms with plastic care each growing lump and brings it to a bear. And that's a well-known theory about bear cub. Not very popular.
Yes, I won't comment on that, Jack. I just merely leave it to the common sense of my listeners and audience. I've heard some wet statements in my life.
In any case, the word pagan.
Pagan?
Hmm.
Well, it was, it still is, somebody who doesn't follow the established religion of the country in which you happen to be living at the time.
Yes, and originally?
Well, I imagine that it has something to do with Pan as usual.
No.
No? I don't know.
It's rather poor. It originally meant a rustic or a civilian or even a country bumpkin, paganus, and it was Roman soldiers who referred to everybody who wasn't in the regular army as a country bumpkin or a civilian, and the first Christians called themselves soldier of Christ, and they adopted this curious military slang for anybody who wasn't a soldier of Christ and therefore was a pagan, a country bumpkin, and one who worshipped false gods. So that's how it happened. One out of two. Frank Miller, a wild goose chase.
That's what you give me when you start me off with a couple of lines of Childe Harold. Wild goose chase is a chase in which you're unlikely to catch what you're chasing.
Yes, and originally?
Because it's a wild goose is a difficult thing to catch.
Yes, I think that's good enough.
That's all I can do, I tell you.
I think we had two marks. There is also the sense that even if you did catch it, it wouldn't be much use. And not only is it a tradition that wild geese are rather hard to catch, they're supposed not to be very good to eat when you have caught them.
You get a sort of that Mallard imaginaire coming
in. If we're going to mix up ducks and geese, I'm going on to the next round. And the next round is a quick round of slang, one mark each. What are the following words mean in rhyming slang or in its abbreviations? Lewis Powell, what are your minces?
Minces?
Mm-hmm. Minces.
Your glims, dear.
Mince pies. Eyes.
Mince pies, eyes, minces, eyes. Dennis Norton, bird.
Is it a question or an opinion? Yeah. It's that he did 3 months bird.
Yes,
that's
it.
It's 3 months in prison.
Yes, and why?
Could he done something wrong with you?
Bird in the hand, bird line.
That's
time.
It.
Time.
Yeah. Bird line, time, and therefore meaning a sentence in jail, and therefore doing bird, or 3 months bird, one mark. Nancy Spain, what is your chibi?
Chase, face.
Yes, can be sometimes chibi. Chevy Norley, Chevy Chase, face. And Frank Miller, salmon.
It's salmon meunier, à la maître d'hôtel, which is old Cockney rhyming slang for smell. Straight to the road.
Frostbite.
Salmon Niatica. What? Frostbite.
Go on, let her get you.
Oh, we're not
going to be port.
Let's try again.
Gout.
Trout, salmon.
Yes, yes, you're getting that. Let's have it, Dillis.
Salmon gout.
I give up. I've done my level best. I will give them all. Salmon trout means gout.
Do you mean that Cockneys are walking around saying, I see his lordship's got a touch of the old salmon trout? Good lord.
Checker and us on gout. Yes.
And now we come to the last round and go back to the quotations I gave to the two teams earlier on. And Dennis Power first, 2 marks, if you can do it. The origin of your quotation, which was, On y soit qui mal y pense.
Well, it's all mixed up with garters.
Yes?
It's French, too.
Yes, it's French, yes.
Extremely.
The French didn't wear suspenders, so they had garters.
That is a doubtful historical accuracy.
That's right. They had garters. Wait a minute, they had garters.
Except for Madame Rouleau.
And so, when they showed their garters, which was very immodest of them, they said, shamed him who thinks evil, they said.
Yes, that's quite right. That is the translation of the phrase.
They were very modest people, the French.
And nowadays, what about this particular phrase?
Well, we go back to garters.
Yes.
And it is the kind of... I don't think it's written on the order of the garter, but
yes.
It's the...
Yes.
It is written on. Mm-hmm. Francis is written on.
It is on mine.
Congratulations, Dad. It is the motto of the most noble order of the garter, and it means, as Lewis quite rightly said, shame to him who thinks evil of it, rather than the usual translation, which is evil be to him who evil thinks, which doesn't mean very much at all. Now, Nancy Spain, origin of your quotation, against the undivulged pretense I fight.
Well, it comes from Macbeth.
Yes.
It's one of those people who didn't like Macbeth.
That's it.
And
it's
he
Banquo
said
in Shakespeare's Macbeth, just after Lady Macbeth was carried out when they said, look to the lady, when they were trying to do a bit of detective work on Duncan's death. Against the undivulged pretense I fight of treasonous malice. 2 marks, well done. Well, now I'm going to ask Frank and Dennis to tell me their explanation of how these quotations came into being. And on this occasion, the marks will go to whichever unlikely explanation receives the larger amount of applause from the studio audience. So first of all, back to Frank Muir, On y soit qui mal y pense.
I don't know whether you like dog stories, because this is a story actually about a dog. It's my dog. I bought him about 10 years ago. His name was a poodle, huge poodle, enormous. He was an unpoodle-sized poodle, really. He's about an inch bigger than the biggest poodle you've seen. That is, if you've seen a poodle, you know, about an inch smaller than this. His name was Manny. That wasn't his full name. It was an abbreviation of his full name, which was Malplaquet, Vulcan of Plux Gutter. Malplaquet being his name and Vulcan being his strain, and of Plux Gutter being the village in Kent where I bought it. I bought him, Manny, from this woman, this dog breeder, and discovered I'd got a spiv dog. I had a delinquent dog. I didn't think they existed. But this was a Ted dog. That's extraordinary, you know, because dogs differ. But one doesn't think they differ that much, you know. It's the only dog I've ever known who leant against the wall. And had a sort of sneer, a curious look, you know, he despised me. And he was an extraordinary dog anyway, you know, he didn't eat ordinary foods, didn't eat dog meat or anything like that. So somebody had to, you know. And he only ate expensive meats. He liked to get his teeth into a piece of cow, and then quite recently, actually, a change has come over him. He seems to have somehow matured. He seems to be a dog with responsibilities. He doesn't lean against the drawing room wall anymore. And, you know, he's sort of eating reasonable food. It really is extraordinary. I wonder why, actually. Every evening I take him for a little walkie. Yes, I take him for his walkie. And not very far, because I've got lumbago at the moment. And I take him just up to the pig farm next door and back again. And I notice suddenly that the pig farm have got a white Alsatian bitch. And she had puppies a few weeks ago. And they're curious little puppies, because they're not white and they're not Alsatian. They're a sort of mixture of white Alsatian and what could almost be black poodle. You know? And another funny thing, you know, is that all the little pups lean up against the kennel wall. Really, it's most important, I thought, you know, that Manny was the only child that did this. But I wondered, you know, about him, but there's no evidence, because he never shown excitement. He's a very placid dog. He doesn't pant or get excited. And except I have noticed something, you know, that as we go up for our walkie, we pass the pig farm and we pass the White Alsatian bitch, and then we come back. And, well, you know, I don't wish to speak evil, you know, shame on he who evil thinks. But on his walkie, Mary pants.
I thought my French accent was the worst north of the Trent, but I know better now. And we come back to Dennis Norton, and his quotation was, "Against the undivulged pretense I fight."
You know the expression, a rebel without a cause, which is a very sort of current, popular expression. It's what all the young men are supposed to be these days. You ever thought why they're rebels without a cause? I tell you why, because it's so difficult to find a cause today. Now, I know a chap called Fred Barnaby who was absolutely born to be a rebel. He had everything that a rebel needs to have. He had the burning eyes, sticking out cheekbones, the roll-neck sweater, everything. But he couldn't find a cause that people didn't like, a cause that he would be one against thousands. You know, and this is very difficult today. If you think back to all the rebels that there were in history, I mean, you take somebody like Galileo, who said, "I say the earth is round." This created absolute consternation in those days. People turned around and said, "You know, this is socialist talk," you see, and they stoned and they mocked. But today, if somebody said, "I say the world is flat," if I said that tonight, you know, there'd be somebody here who'd say, "Well, you never don't know, do you? I mean, you know," it's very difficult to get people to disagree with you heartily these days. People are so mild about everything you tell them. You'll always find people who will say, "Yes, well, you've got to see both sides of the question." And this was Fred Barnaby's trouble, until suddenly he found the one thing in which all humanity is united in its hatred. The one thing that everybody loathes and despises, irrespective of race, colour, creed, faith, sax, clarinet, and rhythm section. He found income tax. And he became the world's first, sole and only income tax supporter. And he camped outside the Chancellor of the Exchequer's place with great placards saying, "Tax us more." And he knew he had to particularise if he was going to do something and really be a rebel and really make people feel against him. And so he hit on this theory, which has since become known as Fred's Law of Undeclared Assets. And that was, you see, this is how income tax works. You're supposed to, all human beings are supposed to tell the Inland Revenue exactly what you have And then after you've told them, they tell you what you've got to pay on them, you see. Fred found out that we don't tell the inland revenue exactly what we have. We receive things that we never tell the inland revenue thing about. Things like birthday presents, Christmas presents, or take down a border fight. Flowers come up in the garden. That raises the value of the property, but you don't write in at all. Or the pig farm had puppies. I bet. They didn't tell the inland revenue, and Fred worked out that actually 3/10 of everybody's possessions come in this area of undeclared assets. And this was the thing he said everybody should declare and we should pay tax on. And that is his motto and the one on which he has become a rebel. If I'll give it to you again, because I don't think you remember it. Against the undivulged 3/10, I fight.
Well, anybody think you liked income tax, because by your applause, I think Dennis's story wins, so he gets the mark. And that brings us to a final score in which Dennis Powell and Frank Muir win by one mark from Nancy Spain and Dennis Norden. And that also brings to an end this edition of My Word.
In My Word, you heard Dillis Powell, Nancy Spain, Frank Muir, and Dennis Norden, introduced by Jack Longman. The program was devised by Tony Schryan and Edward J. Mason and presented by the BBC. Thank you.